The purpose of ethics. Professional ethics and biofeedback serve multiple essential functions that extend far beyond simple rule following. At the most fundamental level, ethical standards create a framework that protects all stakeholders in the therapeutic relationship. When we talk about stakeholders, we're considering not just the immediate client-provider relationship, but the entire ecosystem of healthcare delivery. Consider how ethical standards protect the public. They ensure that clients receive treatment from qualified providers who operate within their scope of competence, maintain confidentiality, and prioritize client welfare. These protections are particularly crucial in biofeedback, where practitioners often work with vulnerable populations and may need to attach sensors to clients' bodies, a practice that requires special attention to privacy and dignity. The field of biofeedback itself benefits from strong ethical standards because they help maintain its scientific credibility and professional reputation. This is especially important for a relatively young field that sometimes faces skepticism from traditional medical practitioners. When providers consistently demonstrate high ethical standards, it helps legitimize biofeedback as a serious therapeutic approach rather than a fringe practice. For individual providers, ethical standards offer guidance through complex clinical situations where the right answer isn't immediately apparent. They provide a decision-making framework that helps practitioners maintain their professional integrity while navigating challenging situations. This is particularly valuable when providers face competing obligations or unclear boundaries. The ripple effects of ethical breaches can be far-reaching and long-lasting. When a provider violates ethical standards, for instance, by engaging in a dual relationship with a client or making exaggerated marketing claims, it doesn't just harm that individual client. It can damage public trust in the entire field of biofeedback, making potential clients more hesitant to seek treatment and other healthcare providers more reluctant to make referrals. The investigative clinician, beyond initial presentations. This section was inspired by Dr. Ron Swatsina, director and chief scientist of the Houston Neuroscience Brain Center. When patients present with sudden-onset psychiatric symptoms or prove resistant to conventional treatments, clinicians must transition from diagnostician to detective. The emergence of abrupt behavioral changes, particularly in children and adolescents, should trigger immediate consideration of underlying medical, environmental, or infectious causes rather than immediate psychiatric diagnosis and medication trials. Several clinical scenarios warrant a deeper investigation. The sudden appearance of new symptoms, particularly in previously healthy individuals, failure to respond to two adequate medication trials, or unexpected resistance to properly administered biofeedback or neurofeedback interventions. In these cases, the standard approach of treating based on DSM-5 diagnostic criteria may obscure crucial underlying pathology. The EEG serves as a particularly valuable tool in this investigative process. Findings of diffuse, slowing, intermittent epileptiform discharges, or spindling excessive beta can provide objective evidence of neuroinflammation or toxic exposure. These EEG patterns often indicate the presence of environmental triggers such as mold exposure, chemical toxicity, or infectious processes that may be driving the presenting symptoms. Case evidence supports this investigative approach. For instance, apparent treatment-resistant depression may actually stem from chronic inflammatory response syndrome, CRS, due to mold exposure, while sudden-onset obsessive-compulsive symptoms might indicate PANDAS or autoimmune encephalitis. Similarly, new-onset attention deficits resistant to standard treatments might result from environmental toxin exposure or nutrient deficiencies rather than primary ADHD. The clinical implications are clear. When standard treatments fail or symptoms appear abruptly, clinicians should look beyond the presenting symptoms to investigate potential environmental, infectious, or systemic causes. This may involve evaluation for mold exposure, testing for inflammatory markers, assessment of nutrient status, or screening for environmental toxins. The goal is to identify and address the underlying cause rather than simply managing symptoms through psychiatric medication. This approach requires a paradigm shift from treating DSM-5 diagnoses to treating underlying pathophysiology. While DSM-5 criteria remain valuable for classification and communication, they should not constrain the search for root causes when clinical presentation or treatment response suggests deeper issues. The presence of objective findings such as EEG abnormalities should particularly prompt investigation of environmental or systemic causes, even when presenting symptoms appear purely psychiatric. By adopting this investigative mindset, clinicians can identify and address root causes that might otherwise go undetected, potentially leading to more effective and lasting therapeutic outcomes. This approach may require additional time and resources initially, but it can prevent years of ineffective symptom management and improve long-term patient outcomes. Diversity and cultural awareness. In today's globalized healthcare environment, cultural competence is inseparable from ethical practice. Biofeedback providers increasingly work with clients from diverse cultural, religious, and socioeconomic backgrounds, each bringing their own values, beliefs, and expectations about healthcare relationships. This diversity creates rich opportunities for healing, but also presents unique challenges. Consider how different cultures view the therapeutic relationship. While Western medical ethics emphasize clear professional boundaries and minimal social contact outside the therapeutic setting, many other cultures expect healthcare providers to be more integrated into community life. A provider working with clients from collectivist cultures might need to thoughtfully navigate expectations about participating in family events or community ceremonies while still maintaining appropriate professional boundaries. The challenge becomes even more complex when providers work across national boundaries, either in person or through telehealth. Different countries have varying legal frameworks governing healthcare practice, different cultural norms about privacy and confidentiality, and different expectations about the role of family members in treatment decisions. Providers must understand these variations while still adhering to their professional ethical standards. Language differences add another layer of complexity. Even when working through interpreters, providers must ensure that important concepts about informed consent, confidentiality, and treatment options are accurately conveyed. This requires not just linguistic translation, but cultural translation, ensuring that explanations make sense within the client's cultural framework. Furthermore, providers must be aware of how their own cultural background influences their perceptions and assumptions. This self-awareness is crucial for avoiding unconscious bias and ensuring equitable treatment for all clients. It's not enough to simply treat everyone the same way. Truly ethical practice requires understanding and respecting cultural differences while maintaining professional standards. Responsibility. Responsibility in biofeedback practice encompasses multiple interconnected obligations that form the foundation of ethical practice. At its core, professional responsibility entails being accountable for one's actions and their consequences while upholding the highest standards of practice. This extends far beyond simply following rules. It requires active engagement with professional development and a commitment to client welfare. The first aspect of responsibility involves maintaining and expanding professional competence. This isn't a one-time achievement, but an ongoing process throughout one's career. Providers must stay current with new developments in the field through continuing education, peer consultation, and engagement with professional literature. For example, when new research emerges about more effective biofeedback protocols for specific conditions, responsible practitioners take time to learn these approaches and carefully evaluate how they might benefit their clients. Communication represents another crucial aspect of responsibility. Providers must clearly explain treatment options, potential risks, and expected benefits to their clients in language they can understand. This becomes especially important when discussing experimental procedures. Consider a scenario where a provider wants to try a new biofeedback protocol that shows promise but hasn't been extensively studied. Responsible practice requires explicitly discussing the experimental nature of the treatment, explaining what evidence does exist, and presenting alternative treatment options that have stronger empirical support. Documentation forms a third pillar of responsibility. Providers must maintain accurate, timely records of their work with clients, including assessment results, treatment plans, progress notes, and any significant decisions or incidents. This documentation serves multiple purposes. It helps ensure continuity of care, provides legal protection, and allows for quality assessment of services provided. Competence. Professional competence in biofeedback requires a sophisticated integration of technical skills, theoretical knowledge, and clinical judgment. This multifaceted expertise develops through both formal education and practical experience, creating a foundation for effective and ethical practice. Entry-level competence begins with mastering the basic technical aspects of biofeedback equipment and procedures. This includes understanding how different types of sensors work, proper placement techniques, and troubleshooting common technical issues. However, technical proficiency alone isn't sufficient. Providers must also understand the underlying physiological processes they're measuring and how these relate to various conditions and treatment goals. The complexity of competence becomes apparent when working with specific populations or conditions. For instance, a provider treating anxiety disorders needs to understand not just how to operate heart rate variability, HRV, biofeedback equipment, but also the physiological mechanisms of anxiety, how these manifest in HRV patterns, and how various biofeedback protocols can help regulate the autonomic nervous system. They must also understand potential complications, contraindications, and how biofeedback interacts with other treatments their clients might be receiving. Scope of practice. Understanding scope of practice is one of the most critical yet frequently misunderstood aspects of ethical biofeedback practice. Think of scope of practice as the legal boundaries that define what services a provider can and cannot offer based on their professional credentials and training. These boundaries aren't arbitrary. They're carefully designed to protect public safety by ensuring providers only offer services they're qualified to deliver. For licensed healthcare providers, scope of practice is defined by state practice acts that specify permitted activities. For example, a licensed psychologist might be able to diagnose and treat psychological disorders using biofeedback, while a licensed physical therapist might use biofeedback for neuromuscular reeducation but not psychological treatment. The specifics can vary significantly between states, which creates an added layer of complexity for providers who practice across state lines or via telehealth. For unlicensed practitioners, understanding the scope of practice becomes even more crucial. These providers must work under appropriate supervision when treating diagnosed conditions, and their supervisor's license limits their scope of practice. Consider a biofeedback technician working under a licensed psychologist. They can't independently diagnose conditions or modify treatment plans, even if they have extensive technical expertise in biofeedback procedures. They must work within the framework established by their supervising psychologist. A particularly challenging aspect of scope of practice involves the use of FDA-regulated devices. Many providers don't realize that without appropriate licensure, they may not legally be able to purchase or use certain biofeedback equipment. This becomes especially relevant for neurofeedback devices, which often fall under stricter FDA regulations than other biofeedback modalities. Mentoring versus supervision. The distinction between mentoring and supervision is crucial for understanding professional development and legal responsibility in biofeedback practice. While these terms are sometimes used interchangeably, they represent fundamentally different relationships with distinct purposes and obligations. Mentoring is primarily an educational relationship focused on skill development and professional growth. When BCIA requires mentoring for certification, they're looking for an experienced practitioner to guide the developing professional through the practical applications of biofeedback techniques. A mentor might demonstrate proper sensor placement, explain how to interpret feedback displays, or discuss strategies for working with challenging clients. This relationship is collaborative and developmental, without legal implications for client care. Supervision, on the other hand, carries specific legal responsibilities. When a licensed professional supervises an unlicensed provider, they assume legal responsibility for the care provided to clients. This means the supervisor must actively oversee treatment planning, review client progress, and ensure all services fall within appropriate legal and ethical boundaries. The supervisor can be held liable for the supervisee's actions, which creates a much more structured and regulated relationship than mentoring. The implications of this distinction become clear in practical situations. Consider a case where an unlicensed biofeedback technician is working with a client who develops unexpected symptoms during treatment. Under a mentoring relationship, the mentor might offer advice or suggestions, but has no legal obligation to intervene. under supervision, the supervisor has a legal duty to ensure appropriate care is provided and might need to become directly involved in the case. Public statements. The ethical management of public statements represents a critical responsibility for biofeedback practitioners. Every public communication, from website content to conference presentations, must meet high standards of accuracy and transparency. This obligation stems from our field's commitment to maintaining public trust and ensuring that potential clients can make informed decisions about their healthcare. When discussing biofeedback treatments, practitioners must carefully balance enthusiasm for their field with scientific accuracy. Consider how this plays out in marketing materials. While a provider might be excited about positive results they've seen in their practice, they must ensure their claims are supported by current research evidence. Rather than saying biofeedback cures anxiety, a more ethical approach would be to say, "Research has shown biofeedback can be effective in reducing anxiety symptoms, with studies indicating improvement rates of X percent." Professional credentials require particularly careful handling in public statements. Every degree, certification, or credential listed must be both relevant to clinical practice and earned from a regionally accredited institution. This might seem straightforward, but it can create challenging situations. For example, if a practitioner holds a PhD in mathematics and later obtained clinical training in biofeedback, they shouldn't list the PhD on their clinical practice materials, as it might misleadingly suggest doctoral-level clinical training. Confidentiality. Confidentiality forms the bedrock of trust in therapeutic relationships, but in biofeedback practice, it involves unique challenges beyond those faced in traditional therapeutic settings. The digital nature of biofeedback data creates special obligations for securing client information. Consider the multiple layers of confidentiality in a typical biofeedback session. There's the traditional confidentiality of client communications, but also the physiological data collected during sessions, screenshots, or session recordings used for tracking progress, and any electronic communications about treatment. Each of these requires specific protective measures. Modern technology has complicated confidentiality considerations. When storing digital biofeedback data, practitioners must use encryption, secure backup systems, and careful access controls. Consider a practice that utilizes cloud storage for client files. They need policies addressing who can access the data, how it's protected during transmission, and what happens in the event of a security breach. The limits of confidentiality require explicit discussion during client orientation. Clients need to understand not just the general exceptions to confidentiality, such as mandated reporting of abuse or imminent harm, but also how their biofeedback data might be used. For instance, if session data might be used for research or teaching purposes, this requires separate informed consent with clear explanation of how identifying information will be protected. Protection of client rights and welfare. Protecting client rights and welfare extends beyond basic ethical principles into specific practical considerations unique to biofeedback. The intimate nature of sensor placement and physiological monitoring requires special attention to client dignity and comfort. Touch becomes a central ethical consideration in biofeedback practice. Unlike traditional talking therapies, biofeedback often requires physical contact for sensor placement. This creates the need for carefully documented protocols about appropriate touch. Practitioners must explain the purpose of each sensor, obtain explicit permission before placement, and whenever possible, teach clients to place sensors themselves. Consider how this plays out with different client populations. Working with trauma survivors requires particular sensitivity to touch and personal space. A protocol that works well for one client might need significant modification for another based on their comfort level and personal history. This highlights why standardized procedures must be balanced with individualized consideration of each client's needs. Biofeedback equipment selection. The selection of appropriate equipment represents a critical ethical responsibility that directly impacts client safety and treatment efficacy. The FDA plays a central role in regulating biofeedback devices, creating a framework that practitioners must carefully navigate to ensure ethical practice. When selecting equipment, practitioners should prioritize FDA-approved devices whenever possible. This isn't just about regulatory compliance. FDA approval indicates that a manufacturer has invested significant resources in testing their equipment's safety and effectiveness. Major manufacturers typically spend thousands of hours obtaining FDA approvals and meeting ISO 13485 medical device certification requirements, providing an important layer of quality assurance. Consider the implications of using non-FDA approved equipment. If a client experiences adverse effects, or if an insurance company audits the practice, the practitioner could face serious consequences. Insurance companies might demand repayment for services provided using non-approved equipment, and liability issues could arise if a client experiences harm. Furthermore, FDA-registered equipment should only be sold to licensed professionals, creating another layer of ethical consideration for non-licensed practitioners. The concept of off-label use requires particular attention. While licensed practitioners can legally use equipment for purposes beyond its FDA-approved applications, they must exercise careful judgment and maintain transparent communication with clients about such uses. For example, if a device is only FDA-approved for relaxation training, but a practitioner wants to use it for treating a specific medical condition, they must inform the client about this off-label use and obtain appropriate informed consent. Infection risk mitigation. The COVID-19 pandemic has heightened awareness of infection control, but this has always been a crucial ethical consideration in biofeedback practice. The challenges are unique because while biofeedback is generally considered non-invasive, several aspects of practice create infection risks that must be carefully managed. Consider the multiple points of potential infection transmission in a typical biofeedback session. Handshakes, shared seating surfaces, cables, and sensors all present opportunities for pathogen transfer. Even seemingly minor procedures like skin preparation for sensor placement can create microscopic breaks in the skin that increase infection risk. This phenomenon, known as common vehicle transmission, requires a comprehensive prevention strategy. A thorough infection control protocol should address three main areas. First, hand hygiene for both practitioner and client must be maintained, with alcohol-based sanitizers often being more effective than traditional soap and water when hands aren't visibly soiled. Second, all surfaces that clients contact must be properly disinfected between sessions using appropriate biocidal agents. Finally, sensors and cables require specific cleaning protocols based on their level of patient contact. The choice between reusable and disposable sensors presents another ethical consideration. While reusable sensors might be more cost-effective, they require rigorous cleaning protocols between uses. For applications involving more sensitive areas, like pelvic floor biofeedback, dedicated client-owned sensors might be the most appropriate choice despite higher initial costs. Professional relationships. Professional relationships in biofeedback practice require careful navigation of complex networks involving healthcare providers, clients, and colleagues. The interconnected nature of modern healthcare demands that practitioners develop strong collaborative relationships while maintaining appropriate boundaries and respecting each participant's role. Consider the critical relationship between biofeedback practitioners and physicians. When treating medical conditions, biofeedback providers must ensure their clients have been medically evaluated and maintain open communication with the treating physician. This collaboration isn't just a formality. It's essential for client safety and treatment efficacy. For example, if a biofeedback practitioner is working with a client who has diabetes, they must understand how relaxation training may affect insulin requirements. A successful outcome requires careful coordination with the client's physician to prevent potentially dangerous situations like hypoglycemia. The practitioner-physician relationship exemplifies why communication skills are so crucial in professional relationships. Biofeedback practitioners need to explain their treatment approaches in terms that make sense to medical professionals, supported by physiological data that demonstrates progress. This might involve creating clear, concise reports that show how heart rate variability has improved over time or how muscle tension has decreased during specific activities. Another critical aspect of professional relationships involves managing dual relationships. Dual relationships occur when practitioners have multiple roles with the same person, for instance, being both a treatment provider and a friend. These situations can compromise objectivity and risk exploitation of either party. This is why practitioners should never treat their spouses or employees, and supervisors should maintain clear boundaries with those they supervise. Research with humans and animals. Research ethics and biofeedback extends beyond standard research protocols, incorporating special considerations related to physiological monitoring and intervention. The fundamental principle guiding this work is that human and animal welfare must always be the paramount concern. When conducting research with human participants, biofeedback researchers face unique challenges related to data collection and storage. Consider how a typical biofeedback research protocol might collect heart rate, muscle tension, and skin conductance data over multiple sessions. Researchers must develop sophisticated systems to protect this sensitive physiological data while still maintaining its scientific utility. This often involves creating coding systems that separate identifying information from physiological data, using encryption for data storage and transmission, and establishing clear protocols for data access and sharing. The process of obtaining informed consent in biofeedback research requires particular attention. Participants need to understand not just the general research procedures, but also specific details about sensor placement, data collection, and how their physiological information will be used. Researchers must explain potential risks and benefits in clear, non-technical language while ensuring participants understand their right to withdraw at any time. Adherence to professional standards. Professional standards in biofeedback represent more than just a set of rules to follow. They embody the field's commitment to evidence-based practice and continuous improvement. These standards evolve as our understanding of biofeedback advances, requiring practitioners to continually update their knowledge and adapt their practices. Evidence-based practice forms the cornerstone of professional standards in biofeedback. This means practitioners must stay informed about current research and understand how to evaluate and apply new findings in their clinical work. For example, when new research demonstrates a more effective protocol for treating anxiety using heart rate variability biofeedback, practitioners need to critically evaluate this evidence and consider how it might benefit their clients. This process involves understanding not just the technical aspects of the new protocol, but also its theoretical foundation and the quality of research supporting it. Documentation plays a crucial role in maintaining professional standards. Practitioners must carefully record their assessment procedures, treatment protocols, and client progress. This documentation serves multiple purposes. It ensures continuity of care, provides evidence of treatment effectiveness, and creates a legal record of services provided. When working with experimental procedures, documentation becomes even more critical. Practitioners must clearly describe their protocols and objectively document outcomes to contribute to the field's growing body of knowledge. Ethics complaint procedures. The handling of ethical complaints in biofeedback practice reflects a commitment to maintaining high professional standards while recognizing the complexity of clinical work. BCIA, as a certifying organization, takes an educational approach to ethical concerns rather than acting as a punitive body. When ethical concerns arise, BCIA first encourages direct communication between the complainant and the certificant. This approach recognizes that many issues stem from misunderstandings that can be resolved through open dialogue. For instance, if a client raises concerns about a practitioner's treatment approach, direct discussion might reveal that the practitioner needs to better explain their rationale and procedures, or that modifications to the treatment plan are needed to better meet the client's needs. However, BCIA also recognizes that some ethical violations require more formal intervention. In these cases, they direct complainants to appropriate regulatory bodies while maintaining records of complaints against certificates. This balanced approach helps protect both clients and practitioners while supporting the field's professional development. Biofeedback Certification International Alliance, BCIA. BCIA serves as the cornerstone of professional standards in biofeedback practice, providing a structured pathway for practitioners to demonstrate their competence and commitment to ethical practice. To fully understand BCIA's role, we need to examine what certification means and why it matters for both practitioners and clients. Professional certification through BCIA represents a voluntary commitment to excellence that goes beyond basic licensure requirements. Think of it as similar to board certification in medicine, While a doctor can practice with a medical license, board certification demonstrates additional expertise in their specialty area. In biofeedback, BCIA certification signals that a practitioner has met rigorous standards for education, training, and ethical practice. BCIA's certification process involves several key components that work together to ensure practitioner competence. First, applicants must demonstrate appropriate educational prerequisites, including coursework in human anatomy and physiology. This foundation ensures that practitioners understand the biological systems they'll be working with. Next, they complete specialized didactic training covering the fundamental science, history, and theory of biofeedback. This training follows a carefully designed blueprint of knowledge that represents the core competencies needed for effective practice. The mentoring component of BCIA certification deserves special attention. During this phase, practitioners work under the guidance of experienced professionals to develop practical skills and clinical judgment. This apprenticeship model allows new practitioners to integrate their theoretical knowledge with hands-on experience in a supervised environment. The mentor can provide feedback, demonstrate proper techniques, and help the developing practitioner navigate challenging clinical situations. To maintain certification, practitioners must engage in ongoing professional development through continuing education. This requirement reflects the understanding that biofeedback is a dynamic field where new research and techniques continually emerge. Continuing education might include attending workshops, participating in webinars, reading current research, or engaging in supervised practice with new techniques or populations. BCIA offers four distinct certification programs: biofeedback certification, HRV biofeedback, neurofeedback certification, and pelvic muscle dysfunction biofeedback certification. Each program has specific requirements tailored to its specialized area of practice. For example, someone pursuing neurofeedback certification needs specialized training in EEG measurement and interpretation, while someone pursuing pelvic muscle dysfunction certification must be licensed in a healthcare field that includes this area within its scope of practice. To summarize the key takeaways, professional ethics in biofeedback serve to protect all stakeholders, clients, practitioners, and the field itself. We examine how these principles manifest in real-world practice across various domains, including responsibility and competence in clinical work, the crucial distinctions between scope of practice and actual competence, the importance of maintaining appropriate professional relationships, and the specific challenges of protecting client confidentiality and welfare in biofeedback settings. We also explored the practical aspects of ethical practice, including equipment selection, infection control protocols, and the management of professional relationships. The role of BCIA certification emerged as a vital framework for ensuring and maintaining professional standards in the field.